The title of my talk is Do We Practice What We Preach? And that is basically the question that I want to answer in the next couple of minutes. And before I do that, is it down here? I'm a Mac person, so let me confess major ignorance. So neither I nor my co-author have any conflicts of interest. What I hope to do in the next 12 minutes or so is to talk about, again, the idea is, do we practice what we preach? And I'll start with what we preach, so looking at the Indian HIV scenario and what the prevention messages are that are going out to people. Then I'll clarify who I mean by we, and that is youth peer educators working in HIV/AIDS NGOs in Delhi. Following that, I'll talk about what we practice, and the practices that I'm referring to are sexual behaviors. Then talking about my limitations and conclusions, I'll wrap up. So by way of background, as many of you know, the prevalence of HIV in India most recently has been 0.29%. Notably, the prevalence among young populations, youth populations, is roughly double that. So as in many parts of the world, the youth population in India is disproportionately affected and also the target of a lot of HIV prevention activities. Now, this kind of a prevalence doesn't seem that high until you compare it in terms of absolute numbers of people living with HIV, and so you can see that there's this large number of youth in India. 90% of the infections in India are through heterosexual sex, and 60% of the budget is allocated to HIV prevention messaging and those kinds of interventions in the country. And so here's what is preached. It's fairly typical messages around how HIV is transmitted and not. There are issues around risk perception, messages around stigma and discrimination. And the last piece that I'll sort of focus on a bit more, having to do with blood and needle safety, sexual debut, concurrent partnerships, and testing. Now, overall in the country, there are two main ways in which this preaching happens. And the first of these is through behavior change communication campaigns. And this is primarily on television and radio, but you can see there's this icon for the cinema. Newspaper coverage of HIV issues also occurs, and of course there's the internet. And this is actually a partial logo listing of the institutions involved with this kind of work. It's a huge business in India. There's also preaching that happens through targeted interventions. And the primary methodology here is using peer outreach, and that is sort of that is the foci, at least of this presentation, where you have young peer educators who are either sex workers themselves, educating other sex workers, injection drug users, educating others. And so really the theoretical basis for all of this is the notion of role modeling. And there are a number of theories that sort of clarify and expound upon peer education, but it's really this notion of, you know, you have role models whose advice you listen to and whose behavior you follow. Certainly this idea in the Indian context has particular salience because of this familiar, probably, exhortation of Gandhi's notion of being the change, and also sort of popular media readaptations of that notion in things like Gandhigiri, and that's more popular culture stuff that you can ask me questions about. Anyway, so this idea of peer education is salient in India. So here's what we did to get to we. After a series of clearances that were obtained in surprisingly a timely fashion, we recruited a diversity sample of NGOs based on actually the National AIDS Control Organization's state authority that has these lists of different targeted interventions in Delhi. And then also through their references and personal contacts of NGOs working on HIV/AIDS, we sought the consent of the organizational leadership in each of these NGOs. And then we spoke to people who were volunteering or working in these NGOs in the past month who were above the age of 18 and under the age of 25. And after administering informed consent, we had a quick survey with them on knowledge, media habits, stigma, and of course, these practices that I'll talk to you about in a bit. The incentive to participate was also entry into a movie lottery. 10% of participants got a pair of tickets to see a film. What we did with the data is we entered it into Access, we had sequential data checks, and interpretive and descriptive analysis on Stata. And to give you a sense of whom we spoke to, it's useful to look at this geographically. And you'll see that there is this east and southern skew of organizations and so these, the bubbles actually reflect the number of people from each NGO as well. And what's noteworthy here is that along this east line is the Yamuna River, and actually there's what could be characterized as a greater risk environment here by way of there being more shooting galleries and, on a related note, more NGOs working with injection drug using populations. You'll see the pink dot on the north line, which is where the old red light district is, and so there are some NGOs there. And along the south is a mass transit highway, and so there are NGOs working on issues of men who have sex with men and also non-brothel-based sex work. This also roughly approximates the population density in India, though we did try to get NGOs in other parts of the city, but there is a slight skew in our representation. So we had 145 people, on average about 22 years of age, about half of female, about 50%, 15% married. The modal educational attainment in our sample was having done some or completed some schooling, though about 1 in 10 of our participants had no schooling. So median household income was kind of a difficult question, because you'll see the standard deviation on this is about $2,000 US a month, and the median is 200. So there was a huge range in the types of people by way of income who were working in these NGOs. Now, what's interesting about the proportion of people recalling HIV/AIDS messages across these different types of sources is that it seems that the behavior change communication aspect of HIV prevention in India seems to have high penetrance. So 4 out of 5 people could recall HIV/AIDS messaging on television, and about half on radio, and subsequently lower from other sources. We asked our participants the UNAIDS, or we created an indicator for the UNAIDS, the UNAIDS indicator for comprehensive HIV/AIDS knowledge, which is being able to identify 2 correct and 2 incorrect modes of transmission, and to be able to say that a healthy person can transmit HIV. So again, in our population of HIV peer educators, only 43% had this comprehensive knowledge, which is a little surprising. And then we administered an HIV/AIDS related stigma scale, which was a 3-point Likert, and so a higher score means a higher level of stigma. And what we found here is that, you know, if you look at the range from 0 to 2, with 2 being highest, the mean level was 0.85, so below the halfway point. And you'll also see there's a positive skew, so it's sort of on the lower side. But the issues of stigma were an important consideration for us as well. So now to the results, or what I like to call the elephant in the bedroom. Normatively, and again, this is particularly relevant because we're talking about peer education and peer norms and that idea, about 57% of our participants knew someone who was engaging in premarital sex. We found that about 25% were unmarried and sexually active. We found that about 9% were married and sexually active. And importantly, as can be expected, there was a significant difference between married and unmarried people in being sexually active. So if you were married, you were predictably doubly likely to be sexually active. And ultimately, this means that about 1/3 of our participants were sexually active. Now, that's not like, oh my god, people are sexually active. But I think the important thing is, what is that related to? So we ran this multiple logistic regression model for the adjusted odds of being sexually active in the past 3 months. And we found that a number of things were not significant. For instance, being married was not significantly related to being sexually active, nor was income, despite that range that we saw, nor was stigma, or HIV messaging on radio, cinema, newspapers, or the web. But what we found is that if you were older, you were almost 1.5 times more likely to be sexually active. If you had this peer norm of premarital sex, you were over 3 times as likely to be sexually active in the past 3 months. And kind of oddly, there was this 14-fold odds ratio of a relationship between having seen HIV-related messaging on TV and being sexually active. Now, we feel certainly these are cross-sectional data, so this could suggest that if you were sexually active, you were much more likely to pay attention to these messages. So I urge you to interpret that in this light and not the other way around. There was a significant negative relationship. That is, if you considered being sexually active risky, there was a protective effect of having completed college. by about 93%, and you were about 75% less likely to be sexually active in the past 3 months had you comprehensive HIV/AIDS-related knowledge. So this was what the landscape was in general, and then if we look at specifically, you know, the use of condoms, which is something that more of us are paying attention to, we found that in our sample of sexually active peer educators, about half were using condoms every time they had sex, and about one in five were never using condoms. So that's kind of interesting. And what we found is that there was no significant difference whether you were married or unmarried. Now, in India, this is sort of a complex notion because there's a lot of work suggesting that being married itself is a risk factor for HIV because of the way in which condom use plays out. But you'll see that certainly we could have a situation where our study isn't powered enough to tell, to show a significant difference in condom use, but even unmarried youth are not significantly more likely to use condoms more frequently, at least in this sample. In looking at being tested for HIV, so again, these are HIV peer educators who are telling other people to get tested for HIV. 60% of them have themselves never been tested for HIV. And the one sort of encouraging thing, given that 90% of the transmission is through sex, is that those who were sexually active were more likely to have had an HIV test, but certainly that only about 40% overall have is surprising. So before I can conclude, I should say that these are self-reported data. Surprising, probably because they're self-reported data. It's cross-sectional also. We have a small sample size of 145 people that we could get a hold of in a fairly short period of time with a very small budget. And of course, as you saw, there is a skew in the representation of NGOs, so there are some issues of generalizability. Notwithstanding this, I think we can say that some youth NGO practitioners in Delhi do not practice what is preached. These data also suggest that there are certain indicators that we would think would be associated with being sexually active are not. Tertiary education and this idea of comprehensive HIV knowledge is a correlate of sexual activity, and so that warrants further examination. Importantly, descriptive peer norms matter, as does age and this whole penetrance of television, and it has an association with sexual activity. Also, there's this piece about consistent condom use only being practiced by half of the people who are preaching consistent condom use, and that this does not vary by marital status. About a third of our people had not had an HIV test, although if you were sexually active, you were more likely to. And so I think to bring this to a more thoughtful conclusion, I wanted to just say a little bit about this notion of peer education as being sort of a profession versus the idea of peer education as a practice from which other people can learn. I think that there is this professionalization of peer education in many parts of the world that I think requires a second look and probably more reflexiveness, particularly as we notice that the whole premise of peer education is sometimes controverted in the actual practices of people's everyday lives. And I think this raises also issues of justice. If you're telling other people to do something and you're supposed to be a peer doing the same thing, ultimately the question might be one of practicality. Are the things that we're preaching practical for people to do? Is it really practical to use condoms in particular situations? And do the risks of HIV, aren't they often eclipsed by other social risks that everyone is subject to, including HIV peer educators? And so with those thoughts, I look forward to your questions, and I'd like to acknowledge all these people. Thank you.